Welcome to another Scots Wee Hay podcast. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Olaf Furness, a journalist, but also founder of the Born to be Wide organisation, which is putting on the latest Wide Days convention between the 13th and 15th of April in Edinburgh. So first of all, hello, Olaf.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. It's a real pleasure. So before you talk about this year's Wide Days, can you give us a bit of background and history to Born to be Wide and Wide Days?
Yes, so in 2002, I moved back to Scotland. It's a long, long time ago now, around the same time as a friend of mine. We'd both been working in London as journalists. And I'd been a music industry journalist, so I had a lot of contacts in the music industry. And when I moved back to Scotland, I was still freelancing for Billboard and Music Week and maintaining those contacts, really. So what happened was that my friend Brody and I got a bit fed up that every time there was a launch, we'd have to go through to Glasgow because we both lived in Edinburgh. And it's nothing against Glasgow. We really like Glasgow, but it was there's nothing worse than that night bus. from Buchanan Street back to Edinburgh when you've had a few pints. So we thought, well, let's try and bring the music scene together in Edinburgh. And the idea was really just to have a night where it served as a kind of leveler. So if you're a musician or you just started a label, you could connect with journalists, with, you know, music lawyers, anything really, other label owners, other artists. And the night was called Born to be Wide, and we launched it in the venue in Edinburgh, which is sadly no more, in 2004. And the idea was we'd just invite people to come and play their favorite records. And we also had a rule for the first year that you were only allowed to come and DJ if you'd never DJed before, because we wanted people to be utterly self-indulgent. So it's really just to get a snapshot, like an extended Desert Island Discs from our guests. And we pretty quickly started getting people with, you know, they're quite prominent in the music scene, from, you know, big promoters right through to, you know, big journalists and, you know, even managers and one lawyer. So it really started to develop. And then we moved to The Street, which was a new bar that a DJ friend of ours, Trendy Wendy, co-owned. And it continued in that vein for about 4 years. So we started then getting people from other parts of Scotland, people that were visiting. So if there was an artist on tour, you'd invite them. We'd invite different personalities that we knew had a penchant for good music. So the footballer Pat Nevin, now a very illustrious radio personality, he came and we had him on the same night as Grant from the Go-Betweens, and it turned out they were really big sort of fans of each other. So it's really nice to do that. We do ones in the fringe, so, you know, the kind of a mixture of things happening in the fringe and the book festivals. So we had Kristen Hirsch, the drummers from Dodgy and the Love Affair, and Irvin Welsh on the same night in the Voodoo Rooms. And then in 2010, I hosted a night in partnership with the German consulate. So we had the consul general DJing with the vinyl that had traveled with him from every single diplomatic posting to the next one. And a German act called Jeans Team, and we did a panel there. And those panels start to take off in 2008. We realized that people really enjoyed listening to things that demystified the music industry. And in about, 2 months after doing the Born to be Wide night, we hosted Wide Days. And That was the very first one. It was conceived as a conference, actually, rather than a showcase event. So right. I got a bit fed up about hearing all the same panel discussions and, you know, having seen all the same people at music industry conventions. That, you know, I worked for quite a few of them, and I thought, I'm just going to do something different here. And I also wanted to be a leveler, because I felt that, you know, at that point, the older generation could learn something from the younger generation. We're actually, I think, the first event that I know of that made all our ticketing digital. And it was a student at Napier University that devised this system to do it. It also meant when we're double booked by the original venue, we could move venue with a week to go, and which we had to do. And really then we did it on a total shoestring, sold out, I think, all 110 places. And we thought, well, while we've got all these music industry people in Edinburgh, let's make them watch some emerging Scottish acts. So we had seven acts on. And, you know, it was just a one day conference. And the following year, we did it for 2 days. And we very much kept that focus on the artists, you know, but very, very tight focus on the artists. So I didn't feel that people needed to be overwhelmed with loads of facts they'd never heard of. Mm-hmm. My idea was like, let's have them all play 20 minutes, work really closely with the musicians to make sure that they bring their crowd and that it looks good. They're not playing to an empty room, and we'll bring the industry crowd. So there's a nice symbiosis there. And that's pretty much the ethos that's continued. We changed the name to Wide Events about 4 years ago. And so under Wide Events, now we have Born to Be Wide, Wide Days, and a youth event called Off the Record, which is really geared towards demystifying the music industry and really just teaching the young team all the classic mistakes and how to avoid them. And we worked out we can do that in less than a day. So this is the 10th year of the record, and there'll be something happening later this year.
I mean, that's what strikes me looking at the program you've put on, is that you've got this great situation where industry people can discover new bands, and new bands can learn from those industry people at the beginning of their careers, which often is where the mistakes are made.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because we learned through Off the Record that if you can start speaking to young musicians and young people looking to work in the industry, be it as managers or promoters or, you know, anything else really, because there's a lot of careers in the music industry that aren't necessarily I was going to say accounting, but maybe that can be creative, but you know, where creativity isn't necessarily a core of that sector of the music industry. Maybe insurance is a better example than accounting, but it is that thing where if you start to explain at an early stage, you find that often younger artists or younger music professionals take that advice on board in a way that, you know, older ones don't. So they just keep making the same mistakes and then getting angry with the world that, you know, no one's paying attention to them. And it's like, well, it's really easy. You just put someone's name in the email, you know, and then they'll pay more attention. But I think that this is where we've really found that having that mixture and having that leveler, because, you know, there used to be an event called In the City, which I'm sure you're of the same vintage as me, you'll remember. And it was founded by Tony Wilson from Factory Records. And it did once take place in Glasgow. It usually took place in Manchester. And artists were kept out of the main conference area. So the only way that artists could connect with the industry people was if they found them in the hotel lobby. And I thought that was, I didn't like that us and them thing. I kind of figured that, you know, having everyone together is the best approach. And it always has been that leveler in, you know, it's been part of what we do, that ability for, you know, a veteran manager like Stevie Wonder's manager, Keith Harris, hanging out with, you know, a manager in their early 20s or with artists and, you know, really creating a community around it. So, you know, we've always invited people we like to speak. And, you know, on the very odd occasion that someone's been a bit of a dick, we've just not really invited them back, you know. But most people are really nice, and they know that they're also there to impart the knowledge. They're there to really help people. So we were also the first event that just introduced a meeting strand where we said to all the speakers, would you be able and willing to do 15-minute meetings? And 99% of them say yes. The odd one that says no is because they've had a bad experience, but overall, people are really willing to do that, and that's really part of what we do as well. It's about making it a leveler, but also making it a fun and enjoyable event.
And with that in mind, what can people expect from this year's convention?
Well, every year we try and, for the past few years, we try to have a certain type of focus. And we're in the process of founding a music export office with Lisa Wittock from Active Events, and sort of member of our team, Jess Partridge, who set up the whole Key Change initiative. And the idea is that we really want to look at how we can encourage people to start thinking about how to export their music and how to think beyond things like showcasing. And part of that is to work with other industries, and part of it is to look at other sources of income that they might not really know about or not know enough about to really take advantage of it. So last year we had a whole round table with music and tourism, because I also found time to host the world's first music tourism conference back in 2016. And we also had something around a round table around music and games. And so this year we're looking at various things which are of interest. So one is how music and government/the public sector can collaborate more effectively. And there's some really interesting examples of that. The universal basic income that's being piloted in Ireland at the moment for artists across the board. There's a Music Cities Network that's been going for several years that's just about to publish a handbook on policy, music in government policy. We've got an academic, Dr. Adam Bear, and funny saying doctor, I don't think I've said that before, his name before, but he's working on a map that would, of a music map, and this concept will allow governments to see where venues, for example, are close to areas of multiple deprivation, and you know where the venues can play a part in helping regenerate areas, or you know, could really be used as a policy tool, full stop. We also got a strand that's focusing on science. Originally, I'd hoped to do this in partnership with the Edinburgh Science Festival, but alas, that didn't happen. So we just decided to go ahead with it anyway. So we're actually on at the same time; our dates overlap. But within that, there's a lot of really interesting things. I mean, I spoke to a young artist for my column in Scotland on Sunday called Cleo, and mm-hmm. she devised this 360 environment during the pandemic, which she then put live performances into. So, you know, you can watch this either on a, you know, VR headset, or you can watch it with a, you know, through your mobile. And I thought, great, you know, this is a really good example of DIY creativity and where technology can be used. Obviously, on a much bigger level, I was amazed by this concept that SWG3 have in Glasgow have pioneered with a company called Town Rock Energy from Edinburgh. And what it does is it harnesses the body heat of clubbers and the audiences in the venue, and it stores this energy in these these things. God, what? God, I wrote the description of this, and now I've forgotten what the word is. But anyway, it stores the energy in these things in the ground, and then when they need that, it converts it into electricity. So when it's this kind of virtuous circle. I mean, I know that gyms have done it for quite a long time. If you're on a treadmill, they'll use that energy to convert into electricity. But the idea of a clubber, the power of clubbing, I really like that. So they're part of a strand called 15 Minutes of Knowledge. And we realized that very often people could sum a subject up in quarter of an hour, give you all the stuff that you really needed. And it meant that we could cover topics without having to build a whole panel around it. So, it could be a service. In the past, we had SoundCloud or Bandcamp, or it could be a concept, or it could be an idea. So we've got a whole 15 minutes of knowledge strand within the science element. There's also something that's looking at adaptive and interactive sound. So it's both in recorded music, but also in the live environment. And that fascinates me. I mean, I first heard about this a few years ago. So the idea that, if you do something different while you're listening to the music adapts to that as well. So there's that science strand. And then coming back to the income side of it, I think there's a real tendency to either look at music purely as a cultural thing or purely as a business thing. And I feel both are really important. And one can't really exist without the other. And one of the things that the pandemic really taught us was just how vulnerable artists dependent on purely on live income were. And I mean, not as vulnerable perhaps as sound engineers or tour managers who really couldn't do anything else. Most artists I knew were able to record and write music and catch up on their royalties or sort out their website or whatever. But I think that it still was a really important lesson. So there is a lot of money to be made from sync. So having your music licensed for film, TV, trailers, games, there's, even sort of smaller blogs sometimes license music, podcasts. And I think the problem with that is that people just don't really understand what the dynamics are around that. So the idea is that we ran a pre-event earlier this week, where it's a 4-hour event with a music supervisor leading it with another music supervisor and a sync agent. They're really just telling people all the stuff that needs to be in place so that they can then pitch their music. And we're going to do something at White Days that looks at, is a listening session, it's a feedback session, but instead of having A&Rs or people from record labels or music journalists, what we're going to do is have music supervisors and sync agents. So the idea is that everyone who submits has to have taken part in that pre-event or has to watch the recorded version and have everything ready. So if one of those music supervisors says, I've got a film trailer that this would be great for, or I'm working with a games company that might be interested in that, the music's ready to go. And they can, they can basically earn money without leaving the house. And this isn't going to substitute live income, but then lots of smaller acts don't make money from live anyway, or it's really hard earned money. So I think just adding an extra string to their collective bows is a good move. And we've also got one of the speakers that took part in the online event giving a history of music and advertising, and another one talking about the stuff that just loses people's syncs, pitching your music to the wrong person, not having your rights cleared, not using someone's name in an email, which is a kind of reoccurring theme regardless of who you talk to. You know, she's her name's Pam Lewis Rudden. She's an American living in England, and her she's very vocal about stuff that irritates her, but she's also extremely generous with her time. So there is that element that if you listen to her and follow her instructions, then you're vastly going to increase your chances of getting your music synced.
Do you get any pushback from musicians who, as you say, they maybe just see what they do as of cultural importance and it needs to be pure and, you know, business is something that almost, you know, it's a bad word, if you like?
Yeah, it's interesting. I wouldn't say that I necessarily get pushback, but I think that there's a tendency in music that people think because they know a few chords on a guitar or they've recorded something or written a song that they're owed a living and they should be paid. And I don't think people who have a set of watercolors and can paint a nice still life expect that. They do it for the joy. And one of my friends, Scott Cohen, who's spoken at a lot of different Y Days events, he's the founder of the Orchard Digital Distribution Company. His take on this is that, you know, you have people that play Sunday League football, or they, you know, they enjoy cycling and they spend a lot of money on cycling gear. But the people playing that amateur football do not expect to be playing at Premiership level and earning Premiership wages. And it's the same with, you know, folk that spend a fortune on cycling, love going cycling, but they don't feel that they're entitled to a place on the Tour de France, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a tendency for a lot of artists to blame everything but themselves. And I can, you know, I've obviously mentored a lot of artists over the years, and I can see the ones that generally prevail. There is an element of luck, but I would say it's more an element of when an opportunity comes that you're ready to take it and you do take it. And I would say by and large, those artists that really have got the work ethic and are making music that people want to hear will ultimately have a much better chance of making a living out of it. Now, one of the things that I always say is that, you know, at the moment there's a lot of railing against streaming services, and there's no doubt that some elements of streaming need to be reformed, but you could generally tell when someone's not well informed because they just go on about Spotify, and, you know, maybe they should be looking at YouTube payments and how opaque they are. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's an element there where Spotify at the moment and people's rage against Spotify and the playlists, the equivalent, and, you know, railing against big promoters. And again, you know, we're looking at how the live industry, there's a panel on this at Y Days, could be reimagined so you don't have two absolutely massive operators, one of which is affiliated to, you know, is owned by the same company that sells the tickets, how that could be reimagined. But let's look at it this way. I think that this in our times, let's say Spotify and Live Nation are the two companies that everyone rails against. And 20 years ago, it was, you know, HMV and, you know, not getting on a Radio 1 playlist. And so you kind of suddenly have this, you know, every generation has their thing that they're angry about, you know. And I think sometimes with justification, but more often than not, when I look at someone railing against Spotify and why they haven't had their, you know, why they haven't notched up loads of streams or ended up on playlists, They have nothing on their they have nothing in their biography. They don't use the shop that they could use. I mean, I've been, you know, served ads to buy vinyl from bands that I'm listening to on Spotify, and you know, they don't have their tour dates on there, and they, you know, so there's, they don't have their social media links. And you're like, well, okay, get all that stuff done, and then if it's not working, then you know, look at what other factors could be in there. But, you know, in saying all that, I have a huge amount of empathy and sympathy for artists that I do see really putting in the time, making great music, and, you know, still initially not getting the success that other people, you know, who seemingly get plucked out of nowhere, do. And, you know, to be honest, I think there's quite a lot of arts where it looks like they've been plucked out of nowhere, but they've been grafting behind the scenes since, you know, they were in their teens, even playing open mic nights in pubs and, you know, all sorts of stuff. Or when you, you know, look at the success of Dylan John Thomas or Jerry Cinnamon, I mean, those guys spent years busking. So, you know, the fact that they've, you know, seemed to have had this meteoric rise is, it doesn't really tell the full story, because that's when they've started to, you know, get noticed, and it's had this mushroom effect. But, you know, for years before that, they were playing the streets of Glasgow and honing their craft.
Absolutely. And talking about the bands and musicians, how do you select them?
Well, traditionally we had, when we only had six or seven slots, in the early days, the only criteria was one of us had to absolutely love the act. And it was really, you know, at that point we had no public funding. We had, you know, it cost us money to put on the showcase, but we really believe that it was an important thing to do. So in that regard, it was pretty self-indulgent, to be honest. If one of us really loved an act, we'd just be like, right, I want this one. And then there'd be a discussion and we'd eventually get six or seven acts on the bill. That could mean that one of us would utterly hate a band, but someone else really loved them. And I mean, it still leads for some amusing conversations. After 7 years of doing it, or was it the eighth year, we finally got some support from Creative Scotland and a little bit of support from PRS Foundation. So at that stage, we decided it had to be a more, less self-indulgent process and a, you know, a more, let's say, separate process from us. So what we started to do was bring in people from outside to grade the applications. And each year we would add things to the mix, you know, because part of it we feel it's important to detach our personal tastes from what we've essentially developed as a talent development program over the past few years, and really be open to artists that aren't necessarily from our particular community, or, you know, let's say from a genre that we don't know much about. Mm-hmm. So the way we've done that, and this year has been a kind of record year in the sense that we had close to 20 people based in Scotland by and large listening to all the applications, and then that was that they came up with a long list of 25 acts, and then we had an external panel which includes the booker for South by Southwest, the booker for Eurosonic, which is Europe's biggest showcase event, and a whole host of people are mainly based outside Scotland. So I think quite often there's a tendency in countries for people, oh yeah, this is great, this is amazing. And then you're like, yeah, but people outside Scotland will have heard an equivalent from pretty much every country in the world. So someone that seems like amazing to Scottish audiences isn't really that going to sort of compete with the equivalent of, you know, the equivalent type of act in Spain or, you know, Canada, wherever it might be. So last year, what we did was we had seven acts on our talent development program. We also ran a sort of opening night with the Music Venue Trust. And then on the Saturday, we had our festival takeover. So this seems like I'm really going around the houses, but I'm trying, you know, I want to bring it up to date. So the way it worked this year is that we reduced the number of artists on the talent development program because it was just costing us too much time last year. And we also found that, you know, the majority of artists didn't fulfill everything on their side of the agreement. So that can be quite dispiriting. And, you know, so we said, let's reduce it from six places or seven places to four, but then let's open up the Friday to acts who don't want to commit to a 12-month mentoring program. So we create more spaces for those acts. And that's a far lighter touch application. You know, we still ask at least one band member to be at the conference because there's not much point in showcasing if you're not going to connect with all the people that we're bringing to Edinburgh. And so we whittled the 25 places on the long list down to a short list. And I think we interviewed six or seven acts. It turned out one of them wasn't able to take part in the first mentoring day. So we offered them a slot on the Friday showcase, and we offered another slot to to one of the other acts on the Friday showcase as well. And, you know, in a lot of ways, it still allows us to give them support. And as for the rest of the Friday, we brought in, it's a lot less formal. We brought in, you know, some external people to advise us on genres that we perhaps weren't so familiar with. And we also looked at where artists were, you know, is there any point in showcasing someone that's just brought out their first single, or where, you know, the feedback has been that they could wait another year. And that's an inexact science. You yeah. Sometimes get it badly wrong, and other times you're putting on acts that, you know, way, way before anything starts to happen. By the time stuff starts to happen, people have forgotten that you did it in the first place. So, you know, Declan Welsh and, you know, the Dead Pony are two examples who showcased 5 years ago, and now Dead Pony are playing South By and, you know, doing all these great things. And, you know, with Declan, last year was when he headlined the Barrowlands, but, you know, it's one of those, he does remember, which is really nice, but it is, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily associate Wide Days with that because it's so long ago. And so, I mean, the other thing is that we were, you know, we actually, as far as I know, are the first music industry showcase that had a majority of female fronted acts. That was back in 2016. The only people that actually referenced that in a positive way were middle-aged blokes, you know, writing for the likes of the Herald and stuff. And, you know, at the same time, everyone is still sharing that poster, festival poster, with, you know, all the male acts taken out. And I was like, well, you know, you should be sharing that, but you should really be shouting about the fact that there's some amazing emerging acts on our bill and that we are doing the opposite. And the following year, we're also the first gender balanced international music conference in the UK to, you know, in our conference program. Now, you know, fast forwarding to now, I mean, one of the problems we had last year with the applications, the process, the mentoring process, was that although we had a gender balanced panel, you know, so literally the same amount of women assessing the applications, the top five acts that that were, or the six acts, I think even, no, top five acts were all male, or maybe, you know, mixed with one female member. And we were like, well, we don't want a lineup of 20 blokes for every bloke. So we also look at that where we know that there's artists that, you know, on the Friday, we can balance that out with artists that we know are really good and that, you know, can use that opportunity. And, you know, that I think is it's a way where it allows us to, you know, refine the lineup based on our own knowledge. So, you know, the mentoring program is chosen by the panel. The Friday is a bit more sort of light touch, where we bring in advice from outside. And the Saturday with the festival takeover is done in consultation with the festival takeover partners. So with them for Montreal, I had already had a wish list of four acts that I really wanted. Only two of them were available, so they then sent us suggestions for other acts. And, you know, it took us weeks of actually finding ones that were available that, you know, we liked and which the festival approved of. And with Focus Wales, it's a discussion, because Focus Wales take acts from Scotland, and, you know, we'll suggest artists, but they also then go, well, we want this one, or we're really into this. So that's the way it's the way it's worked out this year. Unfortunately, we've only got two acts from Wales. We wanted to get three, but we'll, because they take Scottish acts, we'll balance that out and have like at least one local band on as well on the Saturday night on the Focus Wales Festival takeover.
And is this international aspect of it really important?
The international element's really important. And I think that it's something we've always done, even when we had no money. The difficulty is that you're then really, really limited in how many international people you can get. And I think that, you know, there is a tendency for some events with huge budgets just to fly everyone in and put them, you know, have loads and loads of international people. And I think with us, we try and be quite strategic about it. So when it came to the festival takeover, we invited various export offices and showcase events to Edinburgh to take part in a mini summit. And the idea was really like to say, well, okay, how could this work for you? How could this help you promote your talent? Because we didn't want to do what everyone else does, which is basically music export office buys a stage or buys a slot and puts on a bunch of acts. And we said, well, very often festivals have a stronger brand than your artists, the arts from their country. So the long-term aim of it was to go, okay, let's get a festival from somewhere that wants to promote or do some promotion in the UK. They'll have a really good idea of which type of acts go down well with international audiences. Mm-hmm. And we can combine that with food and drink that's typical, or we can even work with a tourism office to promote the destination of where the festival takes place. And that's still a work in progress. I mean, I think that this year with M for Montreal is where we're really getting closest to that. We've been working with the Montreal government representatives in the UK. We're going to be serving, you know, Montreal bagels or Quebec bagels. I didn't realize this until very recently that there's different types of bagels, and the ones that are most common in Edinburgh are actually the Montreal variety. So they'll be served, you know, we've got a whiskey tasting for the speakers and the conference delegates just beforehand, which will include a Montreal whiskey as well. So, you know, there's all those elements where you can kind of combine that. And I think that, you know, on top of that, our view is that you're most likely to do business where you're able to hang out with folk and connect with them. So there's the conference part, which is a day and a half, and we've got these different international strands. We've got a Mexican delegation and a Canadian delegation. But apart from them doing a panel, we've got a dedicated meeting strand where we are really encouraging Scottish professionals to use those opportunities to build a connection in, let's say, the formal conference setting, but then afterwards in the informal setting of the guided coach tour that I take for the speakers, or in the, you know, the Saturday morning where Glasgow Music City Tour is also doing Edinburgh Music Tour. So they're gonna do a tour for delegates in the morning. We've got a lunch for the delegates and then the whiskey tasting. So these are all elements where the delegates can connect. But what we also do is, for us, it's really important that artists connect. And quite often the artists that I see really developing internationally are the ones that have a connection to musicians from elsewhere. And I think it's why you see such strong ties in things like the punk scene. So, you know, where, you know, Dundee with Make Your Own Fest has basically got an international punk festival, which attracts people from all around the world. Yeah. And, you know, they do that because they have to, really, you know, there's this, it's also, I guess, in the roots of the, you know, that kind of whole anarchist punk movement from the 80s and, you know, which I remember well, and, you know, had a real network around Europe and I think in the States as well. And equally, you know, the world of a lot of traditional music is connected in that way as it is in metal. And I think that sometimes it's that thing of explaining to artists that are, let's say, working in more, you know, and I use the term loosely, mainstream genres, be it rock or pop or, you know, other formats. And I think that what we try to do is say, well, look, if you're a local artist, then the fact that we've got four bands from Canada and we've got two acts from Wales, and we've got artists from different parts of Scotland, that is an opportunity as well. And it's a really good opportunity to create a community through YDAY. So we actually host an artist brunch every year as well. So the idea is that all the musicians that play the event have an opportunity to meet, to talk to each other, and, you know, hopefully to develop, you know, something creatively. I mean, Constant Follower, or, you know, the founder of Constant Follower, McCall, he made friends with Dan Asipos, who the Canadian artist who played last year, and they're looking to record together. In fact, maybe are recording together already. So, you know, on the flip side, it could be someone that just is like, oh, I'm going to be playing in Montreal. Is there a floor I can sleep on? Yeah. Or can someone lend me a guitar? Or, you know, or just actually having a friendly audience that, you know, can come and support.
Yeah. I think it would be good to let people know what's on the programme, where they can find it, how they can get tickets, and how they can get involved. What's the best place to go?
The best place to go is the website. So it's ydays.com. There's two strands. If you're an artist or you're a music industry professional, then, you know, the conference is something that is really worth attending, because you can book meetings with the speakers, you can learn a whole load of really useful stuff, you can make connections. And if you're more just a music lover that isn't really involved in any you know, music industry career things, then do come along to the evening showcases. The Thursday's free. You just need to sign up for a ticket and say which act you want to see. The Friday and Saturday is a nominal fee, and It's, I think it's, now I should really know this and it's really bad that I don't, but I think it's £10 for the Friday, £10 for the Saturday, or £15 for both nights. And that gets you into all the three venues on the Friday, the Bongo Club, Sneaky Pete's and La Belle and Gel. So all the acts playing on there, and then on the Saturday, it gets you into the two festival takeover gigs. So that's four acts from Canada, two from Wales, and two from Scotland. So that's in Sneaky Pete's and La Belle and Gel. And just worth mentioning as well, I mean, this is the something that a lot of showcase events tend to put artists in places that aren't really venues. It's a subject that we're going to be dealing with in the conference for YD. So they'll put them in some really horrible bar, you know, which is the sort of place that has, like, you know, bad shop promotions, or just isn't a music, or is a sports bar or something like that. Or they'll put them on in a, you know, in a sort of random restaurant. We really feel that the art, especially if they're coming from far away, but just in general, should be able to have a minimum standard, expect a minimum standard. So, like, a proper venue with, you know, professional sound engineers, with a proper sound check, and with, you know, some food. You know, I mean, it seems really basic, and they all get a fee as well. So, you know, there's a, if you're buying a ticket, or you're like, all right, you know, basically see it as that for the price of two pints, you're A, getting lots of music, and B, you know that these artists are, you know, being treated well by, you know, a showcase event, because lots of showcase events don't treat the artists well. And I think it's, even from the outset, when we had no money at all, we would make sure that, you know, there would be the same fee as for a support slot, and we'd feed the musicians. And from year two, we always gave them passes for the conference as well. So, you know, a lot of events, believe it or not, don't do that. So the artists travel from the other side of the world, they get one conference pass, and if they want to go to the conference, then they, you know, more than one person, they have to, you know, shell out whatever the fee is for that.
Well, I have to say, it all sounds amazing. Is there anything you're particularly looking forward to yourself?
I'm really excited about the showcase acts that I've not seen. I mean, I think we have a really strong and varied lineup. And my sort of act of, let's say, self-indulgence is something called the Bat Rave, which is, you know, I love kind of interesting concepts, and it ties in with science as well. And you'll be finishing the Friday evening with a duo who is a place called Hospital Fields near Arbroath that does a lot of arts residencies. And they recorded the echo, echo sound of the of 14 different bat varieties.
Wow.
And using that and recordings of Hannah, the vocalist, they basically made 14 tracks, which I would say just are a quality acid house. There's a couple that aren't so much acid house, but I love it, right? So, I mean, that's something that there's a Canadian act called Lauren Sam that I've been, you know, listening to for a couple of years, and I never thought she would actually be playing our event. But overall, I'm really looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to the, you know, some of the more unusual conference topics. And last year we hosted something, an online event a year ago to bring together 30 Mexican music professionals and 30 from Scotland and Wales combined. And the idea that we've now got a Mexican delegation coming to White Days is something, again, that, you know, if you'd asked me a year ago that this would be happening, I would never have believed it. So, you know, the whole thing with it is, overall, it's just a really nice way to bring people together and, you know, hang out and, you know, have people from, connect people from Scotland with the rest of the world. So I hope you're going to come.
I am going to try my very best. Absolutely, absolutely.
I'll send you a guest code because it'd be lovely to have you there. And you know, also, you know, if there's anyone that you might want to speak to for a future podcast, then we're happy to make introductions as well.
Well, thank you very much, Olaf, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Yes, well, it's a real pleasure. I've realized that before we started recording, we were talking about how we try and fit into half an hour, but I can see that was massively ambitious. But
yes, it was. We tried our best, but never mind. But all the best with this year's Wine Days.
Thanks very much. It's a real pleasure talking to you.
And we'll be back soon with someone completely different.